For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is America on the Road, named Best Radio Show by the International Automotive Media Conference, and now in its 30th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. I'm Jack Neerat. With me is co-host Chris Teague. Chris, good to see you. Good to talk with you.
Good to see you as well. How are things on your side of the world?
Crazy, and I think not quite as crazy as they are for you. I just jetted in from visiting my daughter in Copenhagen, one of my daughters, along with my wife. We had a great time there. And you've had some wild things going on around your home, haven't you?
Yeah, we've had a blizzard, an earthquake, and then an almost full eclipse here. Though not far away, they did get a full eclipse. But things are going well.
Good. Well, I'm glad they're going well after all that trauma of earthquake and snowstorm at the same time. I mean, what a weird combination that is. We have some weird news for you this week, leading the news this week. This isn't all that weird, though. Toyota has just unveiled its all-new 2025 4Runner. I gotta believe you are breathing heavy about this one. You're nodding, and that's not necessarily great radio, but you can say, yeah, I am.
Yeah, it's making me wish I'd held off on my Corolla for the 4Runner now.
There you go. Each week, we find a new car that you'd love to have, and I think that says good things about you. Well, if you're about to trade in your current car, and I'm not talking about you, Chris, but just in general, and you haven't finished making the payments on it, you might be in for a nasty shock. We'll tell you all about that, what's going on there, and what you might be able to do about it going forward. So a little personal finance tips there. Acura has just announced a new entry-level SUV that will go on sale next year. Details are scarce, but speculation is rampant. And we'll tell you what we know and what we suspect coming up. So it's quite a week we have to talk about, right, Chris?
Yeah, there's a lot going on. I can't wait to get into it.
And we will. But let's do a little business here. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com, EMLancey.com, the publisher of my latest book, Dance in the Dark, and Mercury Insurance. If you're looking to save some money, you should switch to Mercury for your auto and home insurance. Californians save an average of $670 with Mercury. So imagine how much you could save. Get a quote today at drivingtoday.com/auto insurance. That's drivingtoday.com/auto-insurance. You never know that I just got off a plane from Europe, would you, Chris?
Yeah, I can't tell.
Yeah. Well, as your longtime listeners to the show know, Chris lives at one end of the country. I live at the other. Each week we get together to talk about cars, the car industry, and how you can save some money on your car. And of course, we also road test a couple of vehicles, and you have a really interesting vehicle to test. I'm curious as to what you're going to say about this one. Tell us about it a little bit.
Yeah, big value in this one, Jack. It's a 2024 Buick Envista Avenir. It's the range-topping model of one of their newer crossovers.
So a range-topping kind of entry-level vehicle for Buick, I think.
Yeah, a little bit of a contradiction.
Yeah, I'm going to be driving a vehicle that I liked a lot, actually, the 2024 Hyundai Tucson. It's a plug-in hybrid version that I drove, their limited version. I had a chance to drive around my local driving roads in this thing. Really, just kind of dug this car. There's some cars you get into, Chris, I'm sure you've experienced that too, and you just feel at home in them, and this was one of them for me.
Yep, they definitely do.
This week, our special guest is Doug Killian. He's chief engineer of the heavily revised 2025 Ram 1500 full-size pickup truck. So we'll talk with him about that. We have a lot of show for you this week, so stay with us, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to America on the Road with Christine Jack. And it is the news segment. A lot of news coming along. There's always industry news, but we have some pretty interesting stuff for you this time around. There is a brand new Toyota 4Runner. I can hear your heavy breathing through my headphones here, Chris. I mean, this is a cool vehicle. One, I think, pretty close to your heart. This is a vehicle I like a lot, too. It is the Toyota 4Runner. For 2025, and they've changed it pretty significantly. What's your overall take on this thing?
Yeah, you know, I think they've done a good job. They kept it. It's undeniably a 4Runner, both in appearance and probably performance, too, and the capabilities that they've added to it, the new trims and the powertrains. I'm very excited about it, you know, though I am hearing some shouts from the enthusiast corners about four-cylinder and hybrid engines that are going to be in this thing.
Yeah, I mean, shouts in a negative way or a positive way? I mean, it's hard to say, right?
Yeah, I would say skepticism. You know, the old V6 is pretty tried and true at this point in time.
Right, and you know what you're getting out of it. I mean, turbocharging always has some durability question marks to me, but I'm a guy who keeps a car for 20-plus years, so I mean, a little different than the norm. Pretty good numbers, though, 278 horsepower from a 2.4-liter four-cylinder, a lot of torque, 317 pound-feet of torque. So you like a torquey engine when you're driving off-road, certainly. And if you get the hybrid powertrain, 326 horsepower, 465 pound-feet of torque, and I bet that's a pretty broad torque curve, too. So I think those are numbers you got to like, at least on the spec sheet. It sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I wish they'd done a little bit more. It's a little close to the new Land Cruiser, both in, you know, specs and performance, but the new Trail Hunter trim has more ground clearance than the Land Cruiser, and it looks beefy too. So I really can't wait to get behind the wheel.
Yeah. I'm really curious about this Trail Hunter trim. You know, it's supposed to be for overlanding, and it has a lot of cool stuff in it. Some stuff from some aftermarket suppliers that are pretty cool. So I'm looking forward to seeing that kind of stuff. They're also going to offer a platinum grade for those who really want to spend a lot of money. So there's that. Of course, it has the latest Toyota Audio Multimedia, which is a 14-inch screen, so that's good. It has expanded safety. Goes on sale, I guess, in the fall of this year, so it's pretty exciting. I think it's a good-looking vehicle, certainly. A sixth generation of the 4Runner. Something to be excited about, I think.
Yeah, and it's neat that Toyota kept the number of trims. I mean, they even expanded, right? There are nine versions of this vehicle available, and there'll be options and probably unlimited accessories that come out down the road. So it definitely holds on to that off-roader mentality of, you know, customization and choice. So again, I think it looks great, and kudos to Toyota for this one.
Yeah, I mean, the Trail Hunter is particularly exciting to me, or I'm really curious to see what that's like, because I think off-road and just all-terrain is what you really want to do in a 4Runner. I don't know about a platinum grade, because this is not a boulevard car. I mean, if you want cushy ride, find something else. The 4Runner is not it for that. It's not necessarily your suburban runaround car. I think this is built for some pretty serious work out there, and that's where it really comes into its fore, I think, as opposed to just around town.
Yeah, the platinum grade will be the on-road variant, but then you're looking at probably close to a $60,000 4Runner in some configurations, but it needs to be able to get dirty.
Yeah, I like them getting dirty, and getting dirty in those things is pretty cool. Well, we talked about if you were about to trade in your car and you hadn't finished your payments, how you might be in for a shock. And I guess it's a shock that about close to 25% of the people in the country, if they were going to trade in their used vehicle, would find out, because that's the percentage of people, 23.1% of the people who are upside down on their car loan. So what that means is they owe more than the vehicle is worth. That becomes a bad deal when you go in to trade that car and find you might owe $500, $600, $1,000, maybe plenty more on the vehicle that you're trading in. Just to get even, you have to pay that. And then there's the cost of the new car and the cost of the financing on the new car. I mean, that's a pretty tough deal, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, the inflated prices we've seen over the last few years and some of the markets softened a little bit, so it's not all that surprising. But depending on how long you want to keep your car, I know you mentioned keeping them for a long period of time. If you're that far upside down, your only choice really responsibly is to keep it for a while if it's still running well. So I think a lot of people are going to be hit with a cold reckoning when they hit the dealership's lot.
Yeah, I mean, this is a number that jumped out to me. I think this comes from Car Scoops, and it says that the people who are upside down on their loan owed an average of $6,167. Can you think you're walking in and you're already $6,000 in the hole before you go to buy something? And then you have higher interest rates on top of that. I mean, that's a tough time, and you're given the right advice. I mean, there's nothing wrong with keeping your car if it's running right for an extra year or so, just to get out of this kind of situation, because it can be a really bad deal for you, especially with today's interest rates.
Yeah, I say back in the day, but a few years ago, people would try to roll or add that negative equity into their next car loan. But with interest rates being the way they are, banks are also not, they're not opening the purse strings to the degree they were when things were really well, going really well. So It's just hold on to it. If you're that far upside down, just keep it.
Yeah, keep it for a while. Keep it going. Well, the Acura we alluded to in the opening is the new Acura ADX. Not a lot of information about it. It's funny that Acura puts out a press release, but there's virtually no information in the press release about the vehicle. There is a great deal of speculation about what this vehicle is going to be. It's going to be one of their least expensive, maybe the least expensive SUVs in the lineup. They kind of allude to Integra, but I think what they're really kind of alluding to is something more Honda-based, CRV-based or something like that. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, we'll see a small turbocharged four-cylinder engine, maybe front-wheel drive, available all-wheel drive. Acura loves to roll out the Type S treatment, giving this, you know, the sharper styling and the sporty looks. So I'll probably see a few variants of this. I got to be honest, I really like the MDX. The RDX never really tickled my fancy that much, which the RDX is their mid-range SUV at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see if they're able to bring some of those features down to the smaller model and make it as desirable as the flagship.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. We shall see. I mean, kind of interesting. We complain a lot or kind of decry the fact that electric vehicles aren't selling all that well, but there is one electric vehicle that's selling a ton, at least in terms of selling what it's doing for its own manufacturer, which is Lotus. The Elytra is apparently one of the most popular Lotuses of all time. I mean, that's not a bunch of big numbers there, but kind of interesting that this is a really wild vehicle that can go 0 to 60 in less than 3 seconds, 373 miles on a charge, 600 horsepower. Pretty cool vehicle. It's selling pretty well.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very Lotus-like, though, does it? 600 horsepower, that's kind of outside the box for them. But, you know, they've got Chinese money behind them now, and, you know, they've definitely got a more stable financial footing. But they needed this car or this vehicle to kind of boost their fortunes a little bit, and I'm glad to see it's doing well.
Well, this Lotus is a pretty cool car, actually, pretty cool SUV. I mean, it doesn't look like an SUV, very swoopy looking styling, number one. I guess we can expect that from Lotus, right?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You know, it definitely, beyond giving them sort of the EV, the popularity of an SUV, it also gives them a four-door vehicle with four seats, maybe five, that could be used for more than just two people, which all their other vehicles have been recently. So I think it's going to open some doors for them beyond just, you know, giving them an EV in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, it has opened some doors already. Of course, they only delivered less than 7,000 vehicles totally globally last year. So it's not like this is, setting some giant trend that's going to sweep through the whole industry. But it is good for a specialty manufacturer like this. And the numbers are pretty impressive, aren't they?
They are. The acceleration numbers for an SUV, as you mentioned earlier, 2.7 seconds to 60 in the most powerful configuration. The base configuration does it in just over 4 seconds, and it's got, what I'm reading here, 315 miles of range. I mean, the price is definitely not what I would call affordable, but that's a good range estimate for a performance SUV.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the range can go up to 373 miles, depending on the configuration, which is good. And it'll charge to 80%, which I guess is the new full, in 20 minutes or so. So that's pretty cool. 600 horsepower from one of the variants. I don't know that we mentioned the price tag, but it's $115,000 or something like that base. So not for everyone, not for your average suburbanite, but a pretty cool vehicle overall. Interesting where Lotus is going with this thing.
Yeah, it's just expensive enough and just cool enough to be exclusive and make it feel special as a Lotus. But again, those extra seats and the technology and the safety equipment you get, those are going to be, those are definitely probably the big selling points here for a lot of people.
Yeah. And when we come back, we will be road testing some pretty cool vehicles, including the 2024 Buick Envista Avenir. And I was driving the Hyundai Tucson. It's a plug-in hybrid version. So stay with us for that. And we'll be right back right here on America on the Road. Welcome back to America on the Road with Christine. This is Jackie Rad back with you, and we're so glad you're with us. We do appreciate the fact that you're listening to America on the Road. And it is road test time, one of our favorite segments of the week, and I think some unusual vehicles to talk about here. The Buick Envista Avenir. Tell us about it.
Yeah, the Buick Envista, we talked about the base, or not the base, but the non-Avenir trim of this vehicle a couple of months ago probably now. It's an all-new vehicle from Buick for 2024. It's a small crossover. It's front-wheel drive only. You don't get all-wheel drive. in this, but I think they did a lot of cool things with it, especially for the price, Jack. So the one I reviewed a few months ago, a couple months ago, started around $25,000. That was the Sport Touring model. You can get into this thing for just under $24,000, and that's after destination. And you get some good features here, a decent infotainment screen, reasonable base safety equipment. But the Avenir trim that I tested is the range-topping model of the entry-level Investo that we talked about earlier, but it's still under 30 grand. My as tested price just crested over the $30,000 mark with the safety equipment that it came with. Have you driven the Avenir, Jack? Or not the Avenir, but the Invista?
I have not. And I'm kind of curious as to hear what you have to say about it, because I think it's meeting the affordability target, at least.
It is. You know, Buick did have to, I'll say, cut a few corners here, though they're not all that obvious when you're driving it around. It's got a 1.2-liter turbocharged three-cylinder engine with a six-speed automatic transmission, 137 horsepower, 162 pound-feet of torque. Those are, I'll say, modest numbers on paper, but the turbo and that extra torque really does pay off, especially in traffic where, you know, it doesn't feel slow, especially off the line when you're trying to pull into traffic or pull out of a parking lot or whatever. But I will say, and this is one of the disadvantages of a three-cylinder engine, it's slightly less refined than a four-cylinder engine. It's a little buzzier. You get a little bit more noise, though. Buick does do a really good job of noise insulation in general, so it's really not that big of a deal. It's got a Watchlink suspension system that Buick says makes it quieter on the road, but I'll tell you the effect here, especially with our plow-torn roads here, even in April, where you just keep getting snow. It was pretty smooth. You know, it wasn't as quiet as I think Buick would like to make people think it is, but the ride quality is definitely acceptable, especially for such a small crossover. Additionally, I got very close to the 30 mpg combined number. I think I got somewhere like 29.5, which isn't that bad, especially when you consider, you know, mostly in-town driving with some highway and back roads here. The Avenir's got 19-inch wheels. I got to tell you, this SUV, it's not quite the coupe shape that you'll see from like Mercedes or BMW, but it's got a sloping back roof. It really does look almost like a lifted sedan in some ways. It's really nice to look at. I think the lines are smooth and, you know, Buick's curves, their new styling. I have a soft spot for Buick styling, even though some of their vehicles are less than exciting for me. Inside, you know, this is a compact SUV, so you don't have a ton of room, but the front seats are nice. They're wide, especially for my after the holidays heavier body here. But you get synthetic leather upholstery in the Avenir. It feels just as nice as leather. I don't think anybody's going to look at this and think that they got cheaped out on because they didn't get real leather. The Avenir's got heated front seats, a heated steering wheel. It's got wireless charging, power driver's seat, remote start. My model had a power moonroof. So really a lot of equipment here for the right around $30,000 mark. Buick's got good tech, as all GM vehicles do. I think it's one of the high points of driving a modern GM is their technology. It's got an 11-inch touchscreen. You get wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, Bluetooth, Sirius XM, HD radio, the whole deal. The touchscreen is bright. It's easy to see. The cabin is small, so you're not reaching, trying to prod at a screen that's like 5 feet away from you while you're driving. And it's responsive. The processing power that it has is more than enough to make things smooth, flow nicely. You're not waiting for a long startup animations and things flying around when you turn the vehicle on. So I really have to give it kudos for that. I think, you know, as I said, technology is a high point for all GM vehicles.
Yeah, I mean, I like it a lot, Chris, and I'm afraid that GM's walking away from a lot of that, right? I mean, they're kind of threatening, and their electric vehicles point out that they're walking away from Apple CarPlay and Android Auto and a lot of the fairly standard kind of things. I just don't get that.
Yeah, if you look at the new Chevy Blazer EV, they've had to put a stop sale on it to sort some of those issues out. It just, you know, it begs the question of why try to reinvent the wheel when the wheel works so well already. I mean, you know, you could gain millions of dollars in subscription revenue and data from users that you could then turn around and sell and all those things. I get it, but it's a net negative for many, many owners of these vehicles. So I'm glad that GM in general is holding on to CarPlay and things for their gas vehicles. Full suite of safety equipment here. You get forward automatic emergency braking, pedestrian detection, cyclist detection, forward collision alerts, lane keep assist. And you know, I really appreciate the way these alerts come through, Jack. You know, sometimes you get in these vehicles and I'll say some of them, like Mazda's, like the chimes are abrasive and they sometimes scare right. you worse than if you were looking for the vehicles in your path yourself. But everything here is cohesive. It works well. And I think the Invista is a good, it's a solid package for the money. I think if you're not looking for anything too exciting, you want a commuter that's comfortable and you get good features that looks nice. And, you know, front wheel drive is pretty good in the snow with the right tires. So you might get away just fine without all wheel drive. So not a lot of complaints here. I think the buzzy engine and maybe a little bit limited backseat space would be my two biggest complaints here.
Got it. Well, I was driving a vehicle kind of, I guess, one step above that in terms of class, the Hyundai Tucson, basically a Toyota RAV4 Honda CR-V competitor. I was driving the Hyundai Tucson PHEV, so the plug-in hybrid version, the limited version. You know, this is top of the line and pretty pricey. But at the other end of the line, starting at about less than $29,000, you can get a Tucson that's pretty well equipped. So I think that's another one to look at if you're looking at something that's affordable. And I think Hyundai has decided to match Toyota practically model for model with the RAV4 because they have both conventional models, then they have hybrid models, then they have plug-in hybrid models. So a broad range of trims for you. The plug-ins are available in just two trims, the SEL and limited trim. So fairly up-level trims. These are not inexpensive vehicles. And that's probably the knock on this, you know, as I come to the end of this is, you know, what it costs, because the opening price or the starting price on the vehicle I tested was close to $47,000, which is a hunk of change for a compact SUV. It is a great vehicle, a terrific vehicle in so many ways, covered with one of the best warranties, if not the best warranty in the industry. I mean, standard warranty is 5 years, 60,000 miles, 10-year powertrain warranty, all of that's great, great stuff. You get 3 years of complimentary scheduled maintenance on top of that. The plug-in hybrid has a 200-horsepower powertrain, 261-horsepower powertrain, which makes this a fun-to-drive vehicle. I mean, it's the most fun of the lineup, actually, which is kind of surprising. At the same time, pretty good fuel economy. It has an 80 MPGe combined rating, which isn't stellar, I guess, but pretty darn good. 33 miles of electric-only range, so if you're just zipping around town and can plug in at home, by all means, do that. It has a lot of safety equipment, including the limited trim had surround view monitor, highway driving assist, navigation-based smart cruise control, so it knows that you're coming into a curve and slows you down for that. I generally am able to do that myself, but pretty, pretty cool. Good infotainment. I mean, I think you've experienced Hyundai infotainment in a lot of ways. This is a 10.25-inch touchscreen that works really well. What's your take on this?
Yeah, Hyundai and Kia and Genesis, to a degree, they kind of avoid some of the fancy aesthetics and the loading screens and things, and that really makes it easier to use while you're driving. It's less distracting, and they're full of features, so they're, you know, it's a great system all around.
Yeah, I mean, the one feature that and I think we're finally going to get to the end of this with this generation, is the fact that wireless Apple CarPlay and wireless Android Auto aren't available with the larger touchscreen. I think this is the end of that. I've talked to the Hyundai people. I think they're getting past that. But that was the case here. So that's a little bit problematic. I mean, I like the ability to just sit in the car and you're immediately connected to your Apple CarPlay or whatever. You can get an 8-speaker Bose audio system. This is generally a fine car just to drive around in, pretty comfortable, not particularly sporty, but good ride comfort, pretty responsive. With that amount of horsepower, it's very, very good. You have a lot of luggage space, close to 40 cubic feet of luggage space behind the rear row, gets up to 75 cubic feet when you fold those seats down. So all in all, I think this is a really good vehicle. I would opt probably not for the PHEV or maybe even the hybrid, but a conventional gas-powered vehicle that you could probably get into low 30s very well equipped and then drive it for years and years and years and just be happy about it. I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, the added expense for the PHEV powertrain, we've talked about this many times. It's going to take forever to make that money back in gas savings. So I think if you're looking to get a good price up front, the gas model itself is perfectly fine.
I mean, I say that despite the fact that gasoline in Southern California is now $5.30 a gallon for regular and shows no sign of going down anytime soon. So that's a bit crazy. But like you say, the payback period, I mean, it's almost $20,000 more than the base model. So even if you were to get a limited with, or let's say an SEL or XRT, which is their off-road version, with a conventional engine, you'd probably be thousands less than that. And it's going to take you a long time to save enough in gas to justify $10,000 or $20,000 in premium there.
Yeah, you're into Palisade money at that point in time.
Yeah. But this is a sweet vehicle, and I like the size, too. I mean, it is a handy size with a lot of interior room.
Yeah, I've always loved the Tucson's interior. It's that sort of just right feeling. You know, you get five people can ride comfortably. The cargo space is great, as you mentioned. It's a tall space, too. My large dog can ride back there. So great for small families. You might not even, if you don't need the third row, it's perfectly fine.
Right. Ton of safety equipment. So all in all, just one to look at. So two to look at. One you probably never heard of, the Buick Envista in Avenir trim. Very interesting. And then the Hyundai Tucson, much more middle of the road, but I think an incredible value. I think a really good value in the marketplace. So terrific stuff there. And when we come back, we will have a very interesting interview subject for you. Doug Killian is chief engineer of the heavily revised 2025 Ram 1500 full-size pickup truck. So we'll have a chat with him. So stay with us for that, and we'll be right back right here on America on the Road. Hi, this is Jack Nierad, host of America on the Road. I'd like to tell you about my latest book, Dance in the Dark. It's a crime novel inspired by true crime. Many people have told me it is the perfect follow-up to Fatal Photographs, my true crime account of the notorious Hollywood bathing suit model murder case. In Dance in the Dark, Jason Griffiths is a rock and roll drummer turned computer programmer who fears for his life, but he doesn't know why. After living a quiet life for years, suddenly his girlfriend leaves him. He meets the most beautiful woman he has ever seen, and within days, he's wanted for the murder of a drug cartel enforcer, a murder he didn't commit. The cops think he did it, though, and so does the boss of the cartel, so he's stuck between the law and the mob with nowhere to turn. The only person who might be able to help him is the new woman in his life. But will his stunning new companion be an asset or an enemy? And can he escape the desperate situation he's trapped in? Dance in the Dark is available in paperback and as a Kindle ebook at Amazon and at E.M. Lancy Publishers. Right now, it's at a special low price that will save you $5. That's Dance in the Dark by Jack R. Nierad. Thanks for checking it out. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nierad back with you outside Austin, Texas, where we're driving the Ram 1500. With me is an expert on the engineering of this, Doug Killian. Thanks so much for being with me.
Absolutely, Jack. Glad to be here.
It is a lot of fun, isn't it, to have a vehicle with this much new stuff about it? You know, where do you want to start with the engineering of the Ram 1500?
Okay. Well, yeah, actually, there's a lot of new stuff, but it's not so obvious when you first walk up to the vehicle. That's what's interesting is this is still the fifth generation of Ram, but it's what we call a mid-cycle action. It's really a great update.
And well, and a lot of times a mid-cycle action would just be a fascia and, you know,
right,
that kind of stuff. This is way,
right,
way beyond that.
Right, right. Now, the face, so to speak, as our head chief designer talks about, is he'll say the face was updated. We did do a little bit of aesthetic on the outside, but what we really did is we upgraded the powertrain. So the V8 that we've had in the truck for many years is now has grown into a new propulsion system. We have a straight six twin turbo. Makes more power, better for emissions, more fuel efficient, and it's quite a motor, I think.
Smaller displacement, but twin turbocharged, getting a lot of air through that, through that engine.
Correct. Tell us about a lot that. Of boost. Okay, so yeah, 3 liters of displacement. You notice it's only a 3 liter, but 3 liter with twin turbos. Each of those turbos is fed by three cylinders, so they're working in parallel, so to speak. That means we can use two smaller turbos. They spin up very quickly in this phenomenon of turbo lag that many have probably experienced really is non-existent in this straight six twin turbo. We call it the Hurricane, and it really comes to life when we get these spinning up turbos. The name Hurricane almost just, you know, you can really feel it.
Yeah, so a straight six is an inherently balanced engine, right? I mean, talk about that a little bit.
Okay.
I have a straight six in my 1926 Nash.
Okay, all right. So you can appreciate the straight six, the what's considered secondary vibrations, that most engine layouts have some sort of secondary vibration, whether that's a four-cylinder, they tend to be quite strong in inline four. A V8 is almost balanced, a 90-degree V8, but a straight six. As the pistons are moving, some are moving up and some are moving down, and we have these forces of the six cylinders working.
Perfect symmetry.
There's perfect symmetry, and those forces cancel each other out naturally. So a straight six has a purity as a architecture for an engine.
Yeah.
And that smoothness should be hopefully very apparent to someone who drives
this. It was
very
apparent. I mean, luxury-like smoothness, more than luxury-like smoothness, more than V6-like smoothness, for example.
Yes, correct.
Very definitely. Tell us about twin turbos and why twin turbos is important rather than saying one larger turbocharger.
Okay. That's something, so I don't want to get too nerdy, but we'll talk about the phenomenon of inertia. So if something, if you can imagine a big wheel, if you were to spin a big wheel, the bigger that wheel is, the harder it is to get that wheel going. A smaller wheel has less inertia, spins right up. Well, that phenomenon of turbo lag actually has something to do with the inertia of the turbine. So we used two smaller turbines, have less inertia, spin faster, less turbo lag.
Yeah. Get spun up faster, you get more air quicker.
Exactly,
boom, you get more boost quicker, and then you have more power.
Exactly.
And the power is pretty phenomenal out of both versions of this engine, isn't it?
It's impressive, isn't it?
It's
immediate. And those turbos, there's another thing is boost pressure. That's another metric that we look at with a turbo. We go up to 28 PSI, is a very high level of boost pressure.
Big time.
Yes. Yes, on our high output, 22 PSI on the standard output. So that forced induction of air really creates a lot of chemical charge that then turns into motive power at the wheels.
Yeah. And durability, very important. Still, this is a truck. This is a work tool.
Absolutely.
And so this is durability tested to
Absolutely.
Be certain that it meets the standard, right?
Absolutely, yes. The design of the engine block itself, there's some subtleties called cross-bolted main bearings. So there's bolts going through sideways, east-west, and up-down, north-south. I mean, the crankshaft that's held into the engine is it's buttressed, so to speak.
Right, yeah. And a forged crank, you know, kind of a performance
crank,
kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Forged components, cross-bolted mains. It's a serious engine block because it's expected to do tough duty.
Right.
We work it really hard. We run max trailers, up grades, up and down grades. We beat the chassis on our proving grounds. It's absolutely torture tested.
Okay. Let's talk about some other engineering beyond the engine, because there's a lot involved. Where would you want to start with that?
With the engine itself or with
or
the
beyond
truck
the beyond
general?
The engine, other things.
Okay. With the chassis, we've continued to evolve into the fifth generation, our link coil rear suspension. And I think at this ride quality that can be appreciated when you're in this luxury interior, if you've experienced the tungsten interior.
Yeah, I mean, we just drove a couple hours in a limited version.
Okay.
So one down from the tungsten version, but still remarkable ride quality, limousine-like ride quality, smoothness from the engine, and then the ride quality, spectacular. And we were comparing it with other full-size pickups from the other manufacturers. And there's really no comparison. It just rides so much better. And tell our listeners why.
And the reason that is the coil suspension. Now, there are other trucks out there that have a link coil rear suspension. We have variable rate coils. So when the truck is unloaded, we have a lower spring rate, and that adds to that glide feel in the truck. As the truck gets loaded with payload, there's a point where those spring rates then increase, and it manages it at a higher level. So it's managing the capability.
Mm-hmm.
If you drove a limited, you had the air suspension, the four-corner air suspension. So that's constantly adapting to keep the ride level and to keep that ride comfort consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Couples with the smoothness of the engine, the smoothness of the leather, the smoothness of the ride, it's like it all comes together in a synthesized package.
Right. So the coil springs go up how far in the model line, and then you get the air suspension?
Really, the air suspension is available through the lineup.
Ah, okay.
So there's, because not only does it have a ride quality benefit, and we do some of that tuning to take advantage of the air suspension, but there's also that functional point where it maintains a level stance and a level attitude when loaded.
Yeah.
So
the headlights are not pointing up to the
exactly,
sky.
Exactly. Exactly. So, so really we recognized air suspension has a place, not just in the highest levels. It is standard on the limited and the tungstens. But you can go lower into the product lineup and have the air suspension option available.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about off-roading and, as engineering
okay.
deals with off-roading. What are some of the specific things you've done? I guess the Rebel is kind of the off-roader in the bunch. You know, what are some of the specific things you've done?
It is, but we do have an off-road package that's available, not just in the Rebel, but we do have some off-road capability designed tuned to a 4x4 off-road package, which is an option. We really look at the ground clearance. So we do use air suspension as a feature there, and our standard setting of the air suspension is actually higher on an off-road version like a Rebel or the 4x4 off-road option. Mm-hmm. So we set the truck higher. So ground clearance is king off-roading.
Mm-hmm. Right. How much higher is it?
It's about an inch higher. That next setting up is 1 inch higher. Okay. On a standard truck, you'd have to go into the off-road one setting to achieve the normal ride height of the Rebel.
Got it.
So we use the air suspension as a key, just fundamental point. Ground clearance is always good off-road, and I think you'll be able to experience that here in Texas with our off-road course. It's really fun.
Yeah.
Then underbody protection. So we have skid plates under the steering gear, under the fuel tank, under the transfer case. We recognize that there's points where you're either recreational off-roading or using the truck off-road for servicing power lines or whatever it happens to be, is you still want that mobility. While our skid plates are designed to a very high level, we look at the actual gross vehicle weight, and then we design to the gross vehicle weight or fractions of, depending on where the skid plate is in the truck, to ensure that even this heavily loaded situation, if the truck does end up dragging the underground or the underbody onto the ground, that there's a level of protection. Mobility is maintained and you're still moving.
Yeah.
And finally, tires. We pay very close attention to our tires, and we have some great partners in the tire industry that we tune the tires for our truck as a full system. And
tires are very, very important for all-terrain use,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And they have improved so much in terms of kind of all-around use, right? Because most of the time, even with an all-terrain type vehicle, you're going to be on highway.
That's
you're
right.
You're going to be on hard stuff.
That's right.
Most of the time. You want that quiet. You want, those kind of attributes to it.
That's
some,
right.
Some stick at the same time when you're off-road. And really, the tire companies have done a great job in engineering that alongside Ram.
Right. They engineer their product along with our NVH, our noise, vibration, harshness engineers that recognize that's an integral part of the full vehicle system. So we can really appreciate that a tire is a very important part of an off-road package.
Mm-hmm. When you go to a kind of a mid-generation change like this with the engineering, so basically, some parameters are just going to be there, right? I mean, frame's going to be there, wheelbase are going to be there. I imagine all of that stuff's going to be there. How do you approach that? I mean, what's the thought process of approaching that?
Yeah, so I can use the kind of this anatomy model and say the bones and the guts of the truck were improved, but we didn't do, we did a lot when we launched the fifth generation Ram, this DT model. But for this mid-cycle action, we went to what I'll say is the nervous system of the truck, and the central nervous system being its electrical architecture. Now we have more onboard computers, more modules, we call them in our engineering space. The system, this Atlantis High electrical architecture, is essentially the core, the nervous system of the truck that connects all of these computers and does the processing and the prioritization of signals between all of the systems in the truck. And that's where it's not quite so visible that we did it. We did a lot, but that enabled these features like active driving assist and hands-free active driving assist, safety systems like auto emergency braking, moving to the next level for recognizing cyclists in addition to pedestrians or even crossing traffic, something the driver may just not have the attention or the visual acuity. The truck is really doing that work in its nervous system, which
left turns are dangerous, right?
I mean,
left
turns are
very
they certainly are. Yeah. So those are some of the under the skin type of things we've done.
Let's talk about self-driving because this does some self-driving, right?
It does. Now we call it active driving assist. There's a level where it is hands-free, but we recognize that there's still a level of involvement from the driver. But the difference here, yes, there should be. We do have some systems. There's a driver attentiveness sensor. It's constantly monitoring the driver for just for their attentiveness or in a situation if there may be a drowsiness situation or something else that the system needs the driver to needs to nudge the driver and get them engaged. But I'll say having driven trucks with this now as we've developed the system is it's really a partnership between the truck and the driver. And the driver, as long as they're looking forward the system is doing all of the work in terms of
So the truck
steering.
Is seeing the driver to make yes. certain that the driver is looking forward,
correct.
Not reading a book or
correct.
Over their
correct.
Shoulder or something like
correct.
That. And that being the case, it will drive the truck hands-free in particular situations. So what
correct.
Are those situations?
Correct. Now, those situations are mainly highways, mainly what we call a Type 1 highway. The interstates, the U.S. interstates, there's over 125,000 miles of roads, which are mapped to a very precise level of GPS. And that's less than 10 millimeters of precision I'm talking about. So
it's locating it within the lane, within 10 millimeters of
correct.
Precision?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And it's verifying that position with the camera. So we have forward-looking cameras, which can see the lane marking. So that's mm-hmm. another confirmation point as well.
Wow.
And we will even make some slight adjustments within the lane as the driver is passing another vehicle. There's a natural tendency to just want to create a little bit of more of a buffer.
I
will
certainly
move
do that. Yeah.
And when that doesn't happen, or if the truck's driving itself and it doesn't create that little bit of buffer, then the driver may think, "Ooh, this is a risky situation." But the truck is looking at the driver, as mentioned, the attentiveness, but it's also looking at the road with the cameras and then getting the information through GPS. Mm-hmm. That's purely for the hands-free mode. With the hands-on, or the first level of active driving assist, as long as the driver's touching the steering wheel, the system recognizes that the driver's engaged and is involved. And that's not only on highways, that is on all two-lane roads. So we call that an all-road active driving assist. It's always available. Mm-hmm. It's just the hands-free portion that requires
the highway.
Is the
hands-free portion available on other than interstate highways? Are there some divided highways with off, that kind of thing,
There are.
Limited access.
You're exactly right. It's the limited access is the nature of that. So I use interstates as kind of, I think we can identify with that's when we're on the road that's identifiable. But as long as there's limited access with on-ramps and off-ramps, that's where these roads are, have the GPS precision to them. Mm-hmm. And those continue to, as even construction zones come up and roads are changing in terms of their
configuration,
topography,
all the time.
And configuration,
exactly. Yeah.
Is that information is constantly tracked through our GPS provider, and then the hands-free system can adapt to that.
Right. You also do some, I think, over-the-air updates to
we
the
do.
Vehicle, right?
We do.
Walk us through that a little bit.
Yeah, sure. That's another point that's been enabled by our electrical architecture, the nervous system of the truck, if you will. That has more now cybersecurity to it, so we can send messages. We can do over-the-air updates to things beyond, say, just the radio, the infotainment hub in the truck, as we can do updates to many more modules in the truck.
Yeah. Which makes your truck better as it goes
on. It does.
Right?
It does. As we find refinements or calibrations that are just a little bit better, as we can do those over the air updates, and it doesn't require, say, a service visit. Sometimes those are handled by the RAM dealer. Say an oil change happens, they're able to update some modules. Now we're able to do more of that over the air real time.
Right. When will the 1995 RAM be in dealerships? Do you have a sense of that?
We will see. Within dealerships within the first quarter, so March for sure.
Well, you've got to be excited about that.
I am really excited about that. Yes, I love seeing them on the road. You guys were the first ones to drive our. These are still pre-production mm-hmm. trucks, but you guys were the first ones to drive them.
Right.
And so I'm looking forward to see the rest of the RAM Nation.
Very tight as pre-production trucks, and of course you've won IQS from J.D. Power several times in a row now with RAM trucks.
So yeah, yeah, and those really are our customers giving us feedback. We really appreciate the excellent work that J.D. Power does to get into the minds of our customers and get that feedback. But I think I really take that as customers telling us that they're delighted with the truck, and we are absolutely honored to receive those awards.
Well, very cool, Doug Killian. Thanks so much for being with us. We do appreciate it.
Thank you, Jack.
And that was our interview with Doug Killian, chief engineer on the 2025 Ram 1500. Our thanks to Doug for being with us on the show. And Chris, I think the Ram 1500 has been a very good truck for a long time, and I think it just got better. I mean, what's your take on that?
I agree. It already had one of the best interiors in the segment. It's got great tech and the updates to the interior and the new trim that they're coming out with. I think it's going to help it compete. You know, it's got a lot of new, recently updated competition. So I think it's just what they needed.
Yeah, I think they've done a great job with it. It's been one of my favorite full-size trucks for years and years and years now. And you know, I was kind of born a Chevy guy, but I'm kind of converting over to Ram 1500 trucks, but there you go. Before we go, I'd like to mention my newest book, Dance in the Dark, which is a crime thriller inspired by true crime. It's available at both Amazon in ebook and paperback form, so look for that. If you want to read a thriller, has some car chases in it, well, you've come to the right place if you come to Dance in the Dark. If you like our show, please pass it on. Listen on this radio station each week. Let your friends know where you listen to the show, what time, all of that kind of stuff. You can also pass to them a podcast of America on the Road, can't you, Chris?
Yes, a quick Google search for America on the Road podcast will bring us up on all the major platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and so on. Like us, download us, follow us, leave us a review. It'll help us out, and you can take us wherever you go.
Right, wherever you go. Well, there's some places you go that we might not want to go, but pretty much wherever you go, that would be terrific. Thanks to our Sports Byline Network stations for carrying America on the Road. And most of all, thanks to you for listening to America on the Road. We know you have a lot of choices of what to listen to, so the fact that you have listened to us for an hour or so honors us. We appreciate that. And join us again next time for another edition of America on the Road. I got this letter from a reader the other day, and I thought I'd share it with you. I'm on vacation on the beach in Key Biscayne and just finished reading Dance in the Dark. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Great plot and twists I never saw coming. You're really good at creating visual images. Congrats, you made my vacation all that more enjoyable. This is just the kind of feedback an author loves to hear. I'm Jack Nerad, host of America on the Road and the author of Dance in the Dark, a crime novel inspired by true crime. Many have told me that Dance in the Dark has all the realism of Fatal Photographs, my true crime account of the famous bathing suit model murder case. That's great to hear because Dance in the Dark is filled with suspense, plot twists, and surprises, but at the same time, it's a believable story in the tradition of writers like James M. Cain, Jim Thompson, and Elroy Leonard. Dance in the Dark is available in paperback and Kindle ebook form from Amazon.com, and it's available direct from the publisher emlancey.com as well. If you have a chance, please look for it. If it makes your vacation better, we'll both be happy. That's Dance in the Dark by Jack R. Nerad at Amazon.com or EMLancey.com. Thanks for giving it a look.